This episode is brought to you by Animation Aficionados. We love animation. For the love of the media, every week we have a roundtable discussion. You're welcome to join us at animationaficionados.com.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
Welcome one and all to the Webcomic Beacon newscast, episode 33. This is the newscast for August 14th, 2011. My name is Ross Scott. You can find my stuff at The System, which is systemcomic.com. Also with me here this week, again, as always, is the amazing and spectacular Alex Heberling. Alex, how you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Alex, what is your website?
My website
is
alexisguide.net.
And what can be found there?
You can find my webcomic, Alex's Guide to a Life Well Lived. It's an autobiographical strip about ponies and conventions and all sorts of wonderful things like that.
Ponies, conventions, and etc. Always nice.
Etc.
It's the etc. that gets you. also with us this week, a special guest is Steph from sarahzero.com. Hey, Steph, how you doing?
Great. How about you guys?
Good. I had no idea you were Canadian.
Thanks for having me on. This is great. I listen to every single show. I'm caught up on everything.
That's too bad. That's awesome. I mean, awesome. That's what? Awesome.
It's too bad.
Yeah. So I've actually read Sarah Zero because you are one of the few people who bothers to comment on posts and things. And I've noticed, and we've gotten into discussions based on articles in the past, which is great.
I really like your thoughts and ideas and stuff, and especially a while back you and I were talking about web development and the future of interface design, and I was really, really impressed with that. I thought that was really neat.
Yeah, I'm still working on that. It has not disappeared. I've just, you know, it takes a while to come up with something completely different.
Yeah. Well, be sure to keep us all up to date on what's happening with that.
I'm way too much of a publicity whore to not keep everyone up to date, so that is not a problem. So from seeing your website, you clearly come from a bit of a design background, right?
Advertising, marketing, and design.
Cool. Awesome. And how long have you been doing your comic Sarah Zero?
I've been doing it since March 2003, but everything that's online right now has only been since about February 2007.
Gotcha. Very cool. And what is it? Is there a way of possibly surmising it? I'm guessing it's kind of hard to do, but for people that haven't been to the site, you want to know a few words that couldn't take people to get there?
Oh, gee. 8 years in this thing, and I still don't have my elevator pitch down yet. it's basically about a bunch of young people trying to find love and validation on the internet. And you know, the challenges and tribulations that they go through of like growing up in the digital age, the challenges, the responsibilities, and the consequences of their actions.
Ooh, deep.
Awesome. Yeah, some pretty adult stuff going on there.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. All right. Well, with that, we'll get to this week's article. So as always, our man in the field, Eric, whose work can be found at exiern.com. It's .com, right?
Yep.
It's totally.com. Okay. He puts together a bunch of news articles. We read through them. We discuss them. And the ones that I don't like, I just skip over. we've got a lot to cover this week. There's been a lot of cool news. Mentioned in brief, we've talked in the past a lot about Marvel and DC and their various digital efforts. This week, Marvel, without much of a fuss, has started releasing their comics at the same time digitally as they're available in print, which is kind of a new thing for them, and therefore beating out DC Comics, which is scheduled to do that in the future, but they actually beat them to it by like 2 weeks. So that was their kind of subtle, passive-aggressive screw you to DC Comics. Kind of nice. And you can find all their stuff It's an unlimited per month, $4.99 per month service, as opposed to just their regular per issue thing. And they have a lot of back issues, which is apparently really cool. If I cared more about Marvel, maybe we'd talk about this more, but I really don't. Anyway, so the next story, we have Apple Censorship as a underground comics app that covers a bunch of notable underground comics from the 70s and 80s, I believe, or definitely, you know, kind of an older kind of retrospective as opposed to current stuff. They submitted an app for it to both the iPad market and the iPhone market at the same time, same app. And the iPad market got approved with some kind of warnings, and the iPhone one did not, got rejected, and they had to remove a bunch of comics before it could get approved. And so they posted about this process, and we found the article over on Bleeding Cool, but you can read it over from their link to Comics Beat. So basically go to our site, newscast.webcomicbeacon.com, click on our article, click on our link to Bleeding Cool and their link to Comics Beat, and then you can finally read the thing, which will basically tell you all the stuff I just said.
And everybody gets ad impressions. Hooray!
Yay! Yeah, so it is kind of interesting to see that as they go through this article, the iPad version was just released, the iPhone version got caught up, and they had to remove some things. And then here's the last two paragraphs, because it's pretty hilarious. I don't think that Apple wanted to censor us. They did, after all, approve the iPad version with no changes, just warnings. It's a shame that the whole irrational attitude people have about depictions of sex in the USA can make even a forward-thinking company like Apple nervous. The Android market doesn't have the same type of screening process, so that was never a problem. So, there you have it. I just think it's so funny. It's like, wow, we went through all this crap, and Android was fine. But, you know, what are you going to do? So if you're ever going to release Angry Birds Triple X, you might want to think twice.
Ooh.
I
don't want to think about that.
Mm-hmm. Steph, have you ever tried to do an iPhone or iPad app?
No, not yet. But I'm just wondering how long before Apple starts censoring podcasts. I think that Apple's only now becoming aware of the irony of their 1984 TV ad. And you'll see why 2011 will be like 1984. I mean, like think about it. Like, R. Crumb was making avant-garde comics in the 70s, and now Apple is setting us back to 1984. And I'm pretty sure that I'm hoping someone's already made a downfall parody of Apple's censorship policy.
I'm sure it's been done. I mean, this is by no means the first story of this kind of thing, but this one just happens to involve comics more than you know, when it's just some random app. And this is the good and bad of the universe. I mean, if you think of it's kind of like the Android and app and iPad, iPhone markets. It's kind of like the difference between Sega and Nintendo, because Nintendo, like, every cartridge had to be made through Nintendo. So they were really big on quality control, which meant that everything that came out was good, but it also meant that you had to go through them to get it, and if they didn't like it, you weren't getting out there. Whereas Sega, they were like, yeah, make your own cartridges, we don't care. So there was a lot less control, a lot less quality, but there was a lot more variety. I mean, just what comes with the territory of the cultured landscape versus the Wild West, if you will. But mm-hmm. What are you going to do, right?
Well, from the comments, somebody had mentioned that Apple's judgment calls are kind of random, and
they're totally random.
Yeah, if you make any app updates, it requires that all content be reviewed all over again. So sometimes it can get through the first time. Sometimes it's caught, you know, on the second run through.
That kind of makes sense. I mean, if the updated stuff, you know, if you could sneak in something clean and then through the update do something to it. Makes sense they'd want to review it, but it's just that it's such a crazy marketplace and they've had to hire so many people to review them.
Yeah.
That it's just a ridiculous kind of scenario right now.
Yeah. There's a really good quote that I forget the source, but I thought it was pretty interesting. Any barrier to communication is censorship, and the internet interprets censorship as damage and routes around it. So this could be an opportunity for competition to innovate, and maybe someone will make an Android app of all rejected Apple content.
Oh, that'd be great.
That could be a whole category.
I don't think you write app, Android apps in Objective-C. Is it Object-C or Objective-C? That's I don't even know. I get as far as HTML and CSS and pretty much peter out right there. But all right, well, with that, we'll move on to some more comic-y goodness. So Jim Davis has helped release a comic-making software for children. It's called Garfield's Comic Boom, and it's pretty much what you think it is. It gives you the opportunity to create comics in a goofy-looking interface, and you can make a bunch of panels and copy and paste characters. And I've seen these things since I was a little kid, but this one's covered in Garfield stuff everywhere. Is the big difference? And he says, jokingly, back in my day, we had only pencils and paper. This new software is like adding a jetpack to creativity. Kids can craft characters and backgrounds and tell a story with such ease and speed that I'm a little worried I might be out of a job soon. I think he's kidding. but yeah, it's a cute, it's one of these cute little apps. I completely disagree about the jetpack thing though. I would say it's more like, taking out a kid's kneecaps than giving them a jetpack. But, you know, there you go. What do you guys think? Do you guys think this helps kids to want to create comics or hurts them by making them cut and paste characters that other people have drawn?
Well, personally, I'm waiting for the Garfield minus John edition.
Yeah, man. That was also mentioned in the article, is can you make Garfield minus Garfield out of this app? And I don't think that you can.
Well, I wonder if Davis's current artist has been using this for years, and this product should actually be called Garfield Talent Recruiter, or maybe just Garfield Writing Sim.
Yeah, this is actually Paw Enterprises Incorporated. They just released it.
And you know, someone out there is going to use this to remix every single dinosaur comic with Garfield art.
Oh my gosh, I hope they do.
It's going to happen.
I think you could write an algorithm that pretty much did that for you. I mean, because all of it's transcribed into Ono Robot. Someone look into this. Anyway,
did you guys ever use Microsoft's Comic Chat program?
Yes. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, this kind of made me think of that.
For the iPhoto.
No, this was like a chat room program that was somewhere in the deep, deep cataracts of my parents' first computer in ancient old Gateway, and it connected you to Microsoft's, like, you know, MSN online chat rooms or something. But like, it would sort of transcribe all the chats into like a comic strip, and so you could pick your own character, and the character had different like moods and stuff that you could, you know, select if you wanted to have a specific mood for whatever line you were typing. And it was weird, but they had a Pokemon Mew character, which I used a couple times. It was real weird, but that just kind of made me think of that.
I had one like that. It was like over the top superhero-ness, and it let you kind of create comics out of it, and you just copied and pasted these characters, but they're really like, you didn't have every pose for every character, so it was really kind of inconsistent what you could do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I generally think those things, like, they make you not draw. At the end of the day, if you're using that, you're not drawing. So I don't know how helpful they really are, but.
Well, they don't really necessarily help you draw, but I think that it gives people a bit of an opportunity to see what it's like for pacing, storytelling, maybe just coming up with their own jokes and that sort of thing. So I think insofar as that is a tool to get people started in comicking, maybe that's not such a bad thing. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's definitely possible. I would highly encourage someone else to buy a copy of this and then possibly start making a webcomic out of it.
Yes.
I would love to see a side-by-side comparison of like Photoshop and this, where it's like Photoshop, you can do this, 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 and this. In this, you can add dialogue bubbles. In Photoshop, you can 3D manipulate content aware fill, blah, 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 blah. In this, you can make Odie talk.
Or you can make a panel with five Garfields in it.
Oh, just what the world needs. Five Garfields.
Upside down, backwards, flipped, everything.
I wonder how long after you post one of your Garfield comics does Jim Davis actually hunt you down with a hatchet.
More like stop. A blow dart.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just, like, get you in the back of the neck, just thump. Oh, yep. Man. Okay, well, with that, we'll move on. So an article on GigaOM tells us that HTML5 is gaining momentum, which I think we already knew. But current statistics say that by 2016, over 2.1 billion mobile devices will have HTML5. And also news, and this was only mentioned in Tidbit, but I hadn't seen it. Microsoft Silverlight, which was Microsoft's kind of answer to Flash, is pretty much closing down shop and joining the HTML5 party, which also could mean some interesting news. So it seems like HTML5, once again, is kind of killing out the app world as it slowly takes over in kind of a World War II, like octopus ink spreading across from Germany sort of way. It just invokes an image. This just in, HTML5 continues its spread across humanity. I don't know where that came from.
That's kind of what I thought too. Like, I started reading this, but then I just kind of skimmed it because I thought it was kind of stating the obvious. And the only question I really have is, like, why so long and or slow for everybody to adapt to that?
Right.
I'm not a coder guy or anything like that, so I really, really have no idea about all this stuff. I'm still stuck in, like...
The nice thing about the mobile device market and the tablet market is because it's things that are people are owning for the first time, the software that comes installed on them doesn't need to be updated or anything. Like computers, as long as there are computers, there are going to be out-of-date computers. But if you're producing something for mobile devices, then for a mobile device to run it, it has to meet minimum mobile device requirements, which means it automatically has HTML5 access. Whereas computers, if you make a website for a computer, you don't know if that person's got a new computer, an old computer, an out-of-date one, whatever. And you can't guarantee that process. But simply by the fact that people didn't own smart devices before and they are owning them now, it's kind of a fresh start.
You know? Okay, cool.
So that in itself is kind of a cool thing. HTML5, though, won't actually be certified and official from the W3C group that kind of certifies HTML code until something like 2021. It's ridiculously long.
Really?
But that doesn't mean you can't use it. Well, they have to, it goes through all these like processes,
revisions
to get
and
certified and okay. Versions and things. Yeah, HTML4 didn't get certified until forever. But that doesn't mean people aren't already using it. I mean, the minute it got conceived, people were using it.
I used to own a copy of HTML4 for Dummies.
And it'll... Yeah,
I have no
you should
idea
sell
what
that on eBay for 2 cents. And you won't get it.
I think I loaned it to somebody and never got it back.
Fair enough. You're not missing much. Except as, you know, kindling.
Yeah.
Next comes to us an article from Comic Mix, John Ostrander tells us all about writing or signing contracts, in which he says, "Pro advice: hit by a bus." Now, Steph, you said you've read all the articles, so I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to introduce this article if you remember what it was about.
Introduce the article?
Yeah. What's it about?
I read it. I don't have any links open right now. Some guy basically said that understanding contracts and knowing what's in there, because if you rely only on the goodwill of the people that you're signing with, you may not be aware of the fact that companies can be bought, sold, dissolved, whatever. People can get hired, fired. And so you need to kind of put the goodwill aside and just remember that it's just business. And
yeah.
Protect yourself. And so basically the thought that I walked away with was basically like you're talking about being hit by a bus. And I'm like, well, if you don't read and understand a contract, you could be throwing yourself under the bus.
Ooh, nice. So basically what he's saying is if the people you're working with at the company you're working with get hit by a bus, then all you have left is the contract. Nothing that you said, nothing that like you shook hands over, nothing that people promised you, just what's in the contract. So you'd better make sure that it actually, you know, looks out for you. So you need to be clear about that. Which piggybacks on something we talked about a few weeks ago, which is the "fuck you, pay me" video with who is that guy from Creative Mornings? If you look up the phrase "fuck you, pay me," it comes up pretty instantaneously. But basically, it says, you know, have your contract look out for you because it protects everyone involved and make sure it's a contract you feel comfortable signing. And if you have to be a little bit of a jerk about it, that is fine. And if you need it revised first before you can sign it, that is fine. Get it right first because you live and die by that contract. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much the point there. If we really wanted to put enough emphasis on it, I'd say we could just add like a moment of silence right here because it really is that important. But this is a podcast, so we'll just everyone pause it for a sec and then ponder the thought and we'll move on.
Maybe light a candle.
Yeah, light a candle. Someone up to the sky. All right, so next up we have self-publishing threat or menace. Alex, would you like to take this one?
I would.
Awesome.
Basically, there was this article in the New York Times about this author who took a second look at self-publishing and decided to go with it and sold some books and stuff like that. So this guy who works for Penguin then wrote an article responding to it saying that self-publishing is the devil and you must have the benefits of a huge publisher and all sorts of things like that. Which in this day and age is kind of problematic.
Right. All right. Well, Steph, have you done any publishing?
No, not really. Still just doing my own thing. But everything basically comes down to money. And the thing with publishing deals is that the more people there are in the supply chain, the less money creators themselves tend to get.
True.
And I'm sorry, I read something recently, and I can't remember the link or anything, but I think the creator of Diesel Sweeties made a comment or something that he kind of regretted going into syndication.
Yeah, he has spoken out saying that syndication was not worth it for him.
Yeah, because
in fact, we covered that article. Well, he said that a bunch of times. He said that most recently in the article in the Boston Globe that we covered last week.
That's where I heard it from. Well, jeez. Yeah. Well, see, the thing is that the industry still likes to hold on to the idea of the prestige that comes with a publishing deal.
Right.
And they basically say to the creators, look, you get to be famous, I get to be rich. It's the carrot and the stick thing. But the thing is that you will never, as a creator, you will never, ever, ever work hard as hard for anyone as you will for yourself.
Right.
And most people are very clearly finding their own path.
Well, I think there is a balance to it. There is kind of a sticky carrot because I just want to use the phrase sticky carrot. But there is a balance to it because when you're working just for yourself, you have to learn a lot of things trial by fire about publishing. And there is something to be said for there are people out there that do it. It is their job to do it and they know what they're doing. Now, that being said, the profit margins that you can get and the kind of rigmarole that you have to go through with some of these places is ridiculous, especially kind of off the charts with some of the big publishers. But the truth is, if you can get the attention of one of these big publishers, and there's the discussion that's being had through these articles that we're talking about, if you can get their attention, you're probably big enough that you don't need them. Now I've had a self-publishing friend tell me that when he did the publisher thing and he did the self-publish thing, and through that process, to make money selling his books through a publisher, he was making $1 a book, and through selling the books himself, he was making $10 a book. So mm-hmm. Now he was selling about 1/10 the amount when he was self-publishing because he doesn't have the distribution channels and whatever, but through that 1/10 the amount, he was making the same amount of money and he was mm-hmm. keeping all the rights and everything to himself.
Yep.
And that very well can be the case for self-publishing. Now that being said, there is still a kind of gravitas, for lack of a better word, that comes along with having a real publisher. People look at you a little more seriously when you have a self-publisher in certain places. If you say to, say, a convention, oh, well, I've been published, and it wasn't just me publishing it. Like, no, Penguin published my things. You know, that still carries some weight, right? Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But it is changing, though. It is changing because we're living now in a can-do society where we're a whole bunch of just individual entrepreneurs, basically. So, you know, I think that that's an inspiration for the next wave of people. And eventually there will come a time where, you know, the publishing houses will be niche.
That's true. But I guess my point is, because everyone can do it doesn't mean that like, it doesn't carry as much to it when everyone can do it, because, like, the same thing that makes publishing elite, the fact that there only so many things get quote-unquote really published in this, like, professional model sense, because only so many do it, when you've reached that status, it gives you a certain status, whereas because self-publishing, anyone can do it, whether they're, you know, successful at it or not, it doesn't have that kind of sense and weight to it, right?
I understand that, but I think that eventually it's going to become the norm, because a lot of established people and successful people, they don't want anything to do with publishers and, right, and that kind of thing. So, true. You know, like, they're just trying really hard to say, hey, well, come back to us and we'll give you a 0.0005% bonus on ebooks, you know? Right. Like, people are, like, creators are getting smart. They're talking, they're networking, and they're realizing that it's a sinking ship.
Yeah, I feel like self-publishing is, you can fine-tune it much, much more closely to your specific, you know, demographic and situation and stuff like that.
Yeah.
If you can afford a, you know, 100,000 book print run, then you can do that. But, you know, for people who are only doing maybe like a 200 book print run, that's, you know, it's feasible for them too. So,
can I tell you guys a quick story? So this week on Ross Talks About Himself Theater, I actually have a book agent, believe it or not. Through this weird set of circumstances, I almost did work for the New Yorker through a friend of mine that suggested me, and they couldn't publish my stuff and they felt bad about it. So they set me up to meet with a publisher. So I actually met with a publisher, one of these like big publishing houses, and went there with a bunch of work and all this stuff. And they were really nice and said, oh, we love your stuff. God, do we guess? Oh, I wish we could publish, but we can't. You should go do a whole lot more work and come back to us. basically is what they said. And so I have actually seen this kind of world that,
nice
and
them.
Through this whole process, I actually have a book agent who's waiting on me for a pitch, and you can create these pitches and things and all this stuff. The one nice thing that I can say about this is that, the one nice thing that I can say about this process, though, is if you get a book pitch done, then you can do all the work after getting paid a bit. If you do it right. So what you can do is create a book pitch, right? Which means you don't create the entire book. You only create like 15 sample pages, or, you know, the overall plot overview and a few sketches and character sketches and things. A good example would be like Poorcraft. Before Poorcraft came out, and when Spike was kind of putting it on Kickstarter, she said, here's the person's artwork, here's what it's going to be about, here's like a sample chapter, now give us money. That process through that point, only stopping there and then pitching that around, and then you get paid in like a signing bonus, and then you do the rest of the book. Now from there, a lot of bad and good things can happen, and maybe it's successful and maybe it's not, but there is still, I think, a place for that world a little bit. It's just definitely not for everyone, and not fun. But my book agent is awesome. She's great.
Yeah, there are some benefits and, you know, drawbacks with either system, really. I mean, it's the same in the graphic design and illustration worlds, is that if you can get an art rep, then they can get the work for you, but they take a cut. So once again, it comes down to time or money. Do you yourself want to put in the time to get the work and make the contacts? Or do you want to just, like, are you so busy with work that you just need somebody to help you out? So there's different ways to go at it. And I think that's the message that we should walk away with here, is that there's always more than one option. And don't ever let anyone con you into doing one thing and one thing only, because they're going to get out of it. So, yeah, and there's millions of success stories out there. And so I think that we're going to see a lot more of that stuff. And now even with, like, Kickstarter, that's revolutionizing, like, a lot of creator-driven work and stuff. And we're going to see some fantastic things come out of that in the next few years.
Definitely. In fact, we'll be talking about some fantastic Kickstarter things right after we take a quick break, which we are going to do right now.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
And we're back. Hey, everybody. You probably didn't go anywhere because this is a podcast that you're listening to, but we went out, had a drink, got sauced, and then came back a few hours later. So it's been a long day for us. Anyway, some of you guys have been following along with the Ustream. We record every Sunday, or most Sundays anyway, live on Ustream. You can follow the link over at our website, newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. We record Sunday mornings at 10:30 Eastern, which covers pretty much the East Coast of the U.S., but not Minnesota, as we found out today. Now, Alex, are there people following along the Ustream today?
There are several, in fact. Right now we have Callus Comics, myself and Eric, a.k.a. Dramos, Dr. Prune Squalor, Jazz and Jess, MV Marks, and Tree Lobsters.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys all so much for tuning in.
Shout out.
Glad you're here. And then one of those guests is probably my mom, because she keeps saying that she tunes into the live stream. We hope you guys will join us. It is a great way to start the day. So with that, we'll go right back into the story. So there's an article over on The Guardian via a link from ComicsBeat all about digital storytelling and how it has changed in the new with new technologies, the opportunity for bringing in things like maps and wikis and all this kind of stuff has really opened up a lot of new opportunities. Now, have you guys seen any comics do this sort of thing? This kind of new approach to storytelling? Crickets. Well, I have. Not really, though. Well, we encourage you guys, if you find any things that you want us to talk about on the show, this article or otherwise, to send us an email over at our email address, webcomicbeacon@gmail.com, or leave a comment over on today's news post over at our website, webcomicbeacon.com. And with that, we'll go into our next story, for which we'll bring in our special guest today, the man behind the scenes making everything happen, recording every episode, organizing everybody, and pretty much giving us all a job. The one and only Fess, our special correspondent, who's going to tell us a very interesting story. Fess, how you doing?
Hello.
Hey.
I'm Fess.
Fess, you wanna take us through this just in story?
Well, it's sort of this just in, and this has been happening since Tuesday. On Tuesday I was actually going to be on the Geek Life podcast, and like 5 minutes before I'm supposed to be on, Twitter's like going off on, if anybody reads, follows, Zero Punctuation, by Yahtzee on The Escapist, they know of The Escapist and probably know about the Extra Credits, program that's on there, where it's sort of like this conversation between gamers and industry, so to speak, like an open letter of how to improve the games industry, because gamers, believe it or not, do want to give them money for good games. So it's a really intellectual, well-put program. And apparently for a year, the Escapist has not been paying them. Now that's one piece of issue I'm going to set over there. The other thing was, is that their artist, because they did like, it's like basically like sort of like a flash slideshow kind of production that they make into a video, broke her arm. So they started a Rocket Hub account, which is kind of like a Kickstarter, to try and raise money to help pay for her medical bills and physical therapy and all that. And I forgot what the original asking amount was, but I think it was under, I think it was like $10,000 or less than that possibly.
Right.
And it went up to $100,000.
So at this point, are they just getting her a bionic arm?
Well, it's going to be the surgery and physical therapy and possibly wages for not being in work. I'm not sure.
Right.
And
sort of like unemployment.
I guess. I mean, that's what they're doing. And then there was like other things that they were going to thinking about doing, because they also said that they'd get backers could get like subscriptions to the Escapist, get a T-shirt, you know, sort of things like that. And the Escapist, with all this extra money, wanted to use the extra money to basically
consider their debt paid
for the show,
right?
Among other things, this is all starting. This is all coming from Extra Credit's side first, is what I'm talking about. This is what I heard first, and that sort of thing. So they felt, I guess, entitled to a portion of that. I do want to say that their artist is going to be covered for her medical bills, no matter what. That's not in dispute.
Right.
So, but the going back to them not being paid, they were paid for the first 4 months, and then they're not being paid, and they're bringing this up on Twitter because this is the first time they could bring it up, because they had since sent a breach of contract notice. They're trying to get their IP back. All this sorts of groovy, fun stuff. And on Twitter, they started getting some encouragement and support and other notices of, we haven't been paid either.
And this is exactly why you make sure that your contract is ironclad.
Right.
What happens when you don't get paid? Oh, you stop turning in your work.
Right, and this is what Lisa Foley's did. If anybody remembers Lisa Foley's top five, she stopped doing them because she wasn't, well, allegedly wasn't being paid. There's a lot of, you can read into some of these statements, but only a few of them actually specifically say that they haven't been paid. There was one person who said, "I am Spartacus," and in response to Extra Credits, and then later somebody said, "Spartacus here too." So, I mean, you can read into some of these things. Of course, it's not explicitly listed. But there's certainly something going on. And in the Escapist defense, there's certainly, obviously, economic troubles. And that can be understandable to a point, right, of course. But it still doesn't make the situation any better. Right. And since this is all, a lot of this has been compiled by Examiner.com, which has a very comprehensive article collecting basically everything that's been happening. I'll post that into the chat right now. And I was following this mostly on Twitter, and from what it looks like, the updates so far, it sounds like the Escapist is rescinding any requests for the Rocket Hub money.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that point is just done with, at least according to the summation here and what I was reading. Extra Credits has moved to YouTube to basically produce their shows. I mean, if anything, is like when this was going on there, I mean, I know who's the man behind Penny Arcade.
Robert Hume.
Their business manager.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I saw him tweet to Extra Credits saying that you have my information. Because this is certainly something that could easily be picked up by the Penny Arcade Group, or a number of other groups online that that would love to have a program like Extra Credits and pay them. But this has been a real big thing because obviously they're a really important program for, you know, gamers who want more. And so it's like I could just basically just read off this site, but I think it'd be best for people to read it themselves on the Examiner.
All right. Well, thanks for that great news update. I mean, it sounds like more kind of factual than a point for discussion. But do you guys have anything you want to add, Steph?
I've seen quite a few of them, and I really like them. Aside from Zero Punctuation, I think it's one of the best ones out there. It's kind of it's a blend between I don't know, some of the best stuff out there. Like it's I don't know. I really like the one on Anonymous. That was pretty cool. And yep. You know, they're not afraid to tackle some of the bigger issues, and I really like that. It helps bridge the gap between the gamers and the business end of it, and I think that's great.
Cool beans. Alex.
Yep.
All right. Well, then we'll move on. No, I think it's a great article, and everyone should go and read it. But I gotta say, I think every artist has had their big not get paid story, and you only need one of those to happen until you learn the lesson. And it's I think it happens to everyone eventually, bigger, small, hopefully small. But the trick is, when it does happen, to learn that lesson and try and account for it the next time. I've definitely put in tens of hours, you know, hundreds of hours of work into a project and had it fall through. And it makes you a little smarter the next time around. So hopefully you guys out there can heed this lesson and get it right the first time and have lessons like these account for your one. And may the force be with you on that. So we'll go right into the next story, which is a big one this week. So Womanthology is a anthology of all women artists that we've talked about in the past here on the show. Their Kickstarter is just finished up of their 30 days. So they're trying to raise $25,000 to make this book happen. They passed that a little bit. With a total of $109,301 raised for this account. Now, God bless Kickstarter for accepting more than the amount that people want. And now the question has become, well, what happens to that extra money? Most notably because the artists originally donated their work. So no one was getting paid from this, but now it's raised four times what it was expecting to, and people are calling out, well, people should get paid for this. And they've said on their site over at the Kickstarter what would happen if they raised extra money. They said up to 50,000 will mean more books printed. Up to 70,000 will mean another book will come out of it and more opportunities for creators. And over 70,000 will mean the founding of some sort of organization that will look out towards the issues that this Kickstarter is referring to. This would be a great way to support comics and move the industry and all the fantastic creators in it to a brighter, more awesome future, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a pretty cool thing, but unfortunately has gotten a bit mired, you know, now that there's so much money going into this one thing, people are getting kind of annoyed that the artists haven't gotten paid. In fact, wrangled into the story, Meredith Gran of Octopus Pie posted a whole thing about her thoughts on female artists and her thoughts on, here's what she says, quote, "My sincere thoughts on how to promote the presence of women in comics, : pay them. No, seriously, pay them with money." And, you know, sometimes it really is that simple. If she says later on, to some awesome ways to support female cartoonists that have an impact, if you want to commission them or hire them for projects, pay them fairly. If they do a webcomic or self-published comic, buy their books and merch and donate to their site. If they do a graphic novel or book, buy it. And if you can, buy it directly, order it from your local comic shop, and encourage future books. And if they do a signing, come out and support them. And, you know, So what do you guys think? Should these comicsology or womanthology people get paid for their work now that it's raised so much money?
Absolutely, I would say so. In business, you always need to be paid for your work. And so just a word of caution to everybody out there is never devalue your work. Because these cats, basically, they crowdsourced 140 women to provide free content, free PR, free press. They're going to make tons of money on this. And I think they've already revealed what they think of women. So the charity, I was reading through, Global Giving, apparently has nothing to do with women in comics. And somebody in the comments said that they're wondering whether these guys are a charity or a publisher. Apparently there was some wishy-washy goings-on about what they were going to do with the extra money as it was coming in. And I read through a lot of the links, and there were some other things that popped out of there. And it's really a fascinating article. And apparently the contributors were told up front that they would not be getting paid, so that it's all going to charity. And artists, they need to be, let's see here. It's not enough to just be happy to be exposed, because that's one of the tricks that they use to try to get people to provide content, is that, you know, that, well, it's going to be good exposure, great exposure for you. But, you know, you have to be more driven than that to succeed, and you have to truly value your work. And this is going to be a good wake up call for people, that hopefully they'll be able to negotiate stronger terms on their future contracts.
Right. And this obviously got right into a lot of stuff we've been talking about lately with DC Comics and not supporting women artists. So I think it did kind of piggyback on a lot of that kind of discussion. So it was like, oh, well, they're not treating them well, and here's this other thing, so divert this way.
I got chopped off.
Oh, you didn't miss much. Well, I was just saying
the plain fact that it rose four times the amount that it needed to actually be published, even if they use half of that to produce a whole bunch of books, then that still leaves $50,000 that can easily be spread around and shared.
Steph, can you hear us?
We can hear you.
I don't think Steph knows what's going on right now.
He missed my very valid points.
You totally had one, too. All right, should we just keep going?
Oh, hello, here I am.
Oh, wait,
are you sure?
Oh,
yeah. Thank you. I don't know. I just got chopped in the middle of my my big speech there. And so nobody was responding, so I said, crickets. And nobody responded to the crickets either.
We didn't hear your speech. Okay, we're going to just pick up from your speech, okay?
So, yeah, basically they crowdsourced 140 women to provide free content, free PR, free press. They're going to make tons of money off this, and I think they've already revealed what they think of women. So, wait, did I already say all that? Or did you guys hear all that?
Nope.
Oh.
You just said it the one time, just now.
Oh, okay.
I heard it the first time.
Show. I don't know what you're talking about.
I thought you were continuing your speech.
You're making the editing harder for me.
I'm sorry. Oh, gee.
Just keep going. That's the ambulance.
So, anyway. Webcomics.
Anyway, so, it's kind of a big issue. So a lot of female artists have been talking about this since. So Lauren McCubbin talked about this over on her Tumblr. Daniel Corsetto was talking about it a bit, as we discussed, Meredith Grant, and a bunch more, basically saying that, you know, women artists should be paid for their work and all that jazz. And Lauren McCubbin says, quote, "My name is Lauren, and I'm a bad comics feminist," which actually makes for a pretty good story.
That was a great article. I love that one.
So there's a lot of points here about getting women paid. It's almost unfortunate that this thing got so big, because if it had just raised the original amount expected and then just come out as a book, then it would have been served its purpose and been done, and there wouldn't be any debate. But because it did so well, it's causing more debate than it ever intended to cause.
Absolutely. And just because this person was trying to be a bit of a watchdog, you know, she was taking a lot of flack for that. And, you know, she's trying to help all of women, you know, comic creators. And yet she was like getting the gears over this, like, who do you think you are? And she's just like, dude, I'm just trying to help. You know, we need to know these things if we're going to move forward.
Exactly. What were you guys' thoughts? Should the artists get paid here? Since they never expected to get paid, should that money go towards something else?
Paid? I think that the surplus should probably divvied up between all the contributors. I think it works out to about $150 a person or something, which is, you know...
More than that.
I'm not good at math. I don't read XKCD, sorry, so I don't know numbers that much. But yeah, it's like it as a token of appreciation that, hey, we did a lot better on this than we thought, you know? So it would be a great gesture, even if it's a small amount, you know?
Well, how many total artists worked on this?
One of the comments said it was about 140.
140? Okay, yeah, that is about 100. Well, if they took $25,000 and divide that up amongst 140 people, that would be $178 a person, which is almost like when it's that small of an amount, you know, I mean, unless they want to put a large amount of the money into funding these people. I think it might almost go to a joint better use, you know, like, is it worth it to get it's not going to change your life if you get $150. Like, it's a symbol more than anything at that point.
Yeah.
Whereas if you took 25 grand,
symbol.
But if you put 25 grand into something, into a thing, you know, one place, 25 grand can do a lot more than $150.
Yeah. I didn't really think about that, but
I'm just devil's advocating this.
Yeah.
I totally would want my $150 if I worked on this thing.
I take the $150 and try to negotiate a better contract on the second contract I signed. That was probably what I would do.
I mean, it's everyone donated it because they were believing in a cause, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with, you know, donate, like, if that's something you're interested in doing. I mean, people donated to Comics for Japan funds, and if that raised way more, no one was like, oh, give us our money. It's just that it's about women artists, and so it makes them look kind of weird by not paying the women artists. All right, well, we will just continue the discussion over on our website over at the webcomicbeacon.com. There's no the. So be sure to go and please discuss with us over there. We want to hear from you. So finally, some quick tidbits as we go through things. We have a response to Scott McCloud's Understanding Comics from, who is this by? I'm having trouble finding things. By Ben Towle, who's teaching over at Savannah College of Art and Design. He's teaching a sequential art class over at Savannah College of Art and Design. And I totally forgot what this article's about. Someone help me.
It's a response to one of the chapters. It's kind of like an addendum to one of the chapters in Scott McCloud's original first book, was Understanding Comics.
Right.
So there was a quote in there that I really loved. It was, cartoonists historically have been subservient to the tyranny of popular taste. And so I guess the person who did this, they tried to illustrate that it's not necessarily all about sunshine and roses. I've read both of those books from McCloud recently, his first two, yep. And pretty interesting read.
Yeah,
to learn in there that I can apply to my own work. And they are, however, very utopian and upbeat. So the person who did this, I read through it. And I loved it. It's fantastic. It shows that, you know, everything doesn't always have to be like super, super driven by, you know, like, oh, gee, why can't we all just get along kind of a thing. And because basically it all comes down to money. And the sad reality is that, you know, there's an awful lot of pandering, tropes, mimicry and copying of successful formulas in comics. And readers get acclimated to this as well. So that, you know, if you're a reader of a webcomic and you do discover something that's like written kind of more in this style that this person is trying to suggest, The audience doesn't always know how to deal with it because it's so different and it doesn't use a lot of the same conventions. Right. And people tend to vote with their wallets. So, you know, the stuff that is very accessible tends to, continue to be made by creators, and it's all money, you know, it all comes down to that. So this scenario, however, I think is equally idyllic and impractical to McLeod's viewpoint, because cartoonists who cling to this will end up pretty lonely on that beachhead because people won't be able to relate to it. So, you know, if you want to make something that's truly revolutionary, groundbreaking, you could maybe find yourself the victim of prejudice, and people might call your stuff pretentious. So, yeah, if you want to write something and make something that's about, you know, like children and pets and animals and fuzzy cute little things and stuff like that, you know, like people can identify with that. So that's where most of it goes, I guess.
All right. Cool. So, with that, we'll go to a couple oddities this week. So mentioned in brief, I saw this actually on Boing Boing, but we found it here on the show via Wired and originally from Comic Speak. Marvel is offering special edition Batman covers. If they tear off the cover, wait, hold on. It's Batman, but it's Marvel. Okay, got it. So
yeah. That was confusing.
Yes. Basically, Marvel offered special bonuses to comic book retailers if they destroyed DC books and offered them Marvel books in return. And they got caught doing this, which is, you know, ridiculous. So
collecting the scalps of your enemies.
Exactly. wow. Well put. That's not much to say about it because it's just so ridiculous. But that happened. Also, there's some great Kia ads that are causing a lot of debate, and they're in comic form. They're called A Different Temperature on Each Side, and have comics that are both in a cutesy and really erotic style. I think they're amazing. Alex, I bet you like them. Did you see
them? I'm a little torn. But I think they're pretty funny.
Yeah, they are pretty funny. The first one, the Sleeping Beauty one's pretty great, but the teacher one is a little weird.
Yeah.
So you can go check those out. Just follow a link to anewhype.com over on our site over at webcomicbeacon.com.
The left sides are geared towards children, and the right sides are geared towards men. Another fine example that there are still no women in comics.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, and both have these strong male characters basically hitting on these girls who are throwing themselves at them.
Actually, sorry, can I just back up a second about the DC thing? Mm-hmm. You know how I think last week or sometime recently you guys were talking about that one audio clip of the guy who's like, who should we hire? Who should we hire? Like that DC guy or something?
Yeah, we played that.
Well, I've been thinking about that, and I think I finally have it all figured out. Who they should hire? They should definitely hire Carly Monardo, Meredith Grant, and Kate Beaton to draw strong female characters. And then they can do some other Infinite Crisis reboot, relaunch, and then kill everyone off except them. And, if they actually get hired by DC, then they'll be able to launch a counter campaign for DC customers to burn Marvel comics in store and get a 5% discount on limited edition foil covers of strong female character comics.
All right. You got it all figured out.
Free s'mores over the bonfire.
Yeah. Hooray. All right.
There was something you missed that I added.
Oh, Jenny Everywhere Day.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I was looking right at it. So, Jenny Everywhere Day is kind of your brainchild, okay. Isn't it? So do you want to talk about
it? No, actually. Well, in 2006, the original website for Jenny Everywhere, which is a character, a female character specifically created to be an open source comic heroine, basically. And she was created 10 years ago yesterday. Ben Christensen, another big advocate of Jenny Everywhere, started JennyEverywhereDay.com. In 2008, we kind of agreed that, okay, August 13th, that's when she was, you know, created on the internet, and she was developed from there. So we decided August 13th was Jenny Everywhere Day. 2008, I did it on the Shifter Archive. 2009, he took up JennyEverywhereDay.com and started this sort of like art collection where he went out and tried to get people to do some submissions for it. 2009, they got 8 submissions. In 2010, 14. And this year got 18 submissions at least. And so that's really great, especially on the 10th anniversary. And somebody even submitted like a short story. So you can check that out at JennyEverywhereDay.com for this year's and the previous year's.
Cool.
Congratulations, Fess.
Well, it's not just me. I mean,
I know. I just associate you with it for some darn reason. And Jenny Everywhere Day, by the way, is a Tumblr, so you should go and follow that, JennyEverywhereDay.com. Also, one more thing before we go. I got to mention this because I'm so excited about it. Super Art Fight is going to be playing Small Press Expo this year, which is ridiculous.
Nice.
Yeah, super excited that I get to go in front of all of these big creators and act like a jerk. It's going to be great. So you guys all should come out and support that. If you're anywhere in the DC Rockville area, and are coming to Small Press Expo, we're going to be performing right around the Ignatz Awards. I forget if it's before or after, but it's going to be pretty great because it's going to be like, oh, famous comics people, oh, and poop jokes. So be sure to come check that out.
On the toilet.
Exactly. I forgot about that one. Anyway, thank you guys all so much for being on the show this week. Steph, it's great having you. You're welcome back anytime.
Oh, thank you very much. Peanut butter and jelly. I mean, blue sky and pumpkin pie.
Oh, you're stealing my lines. Thanks again to Steph from SarahZero.com and Alex from AlexsGuide.net. And of course, we couldn't do the show without you. You should check out his stuff at psiwebcomic.com. And Eric for putting all of our news together at exiern.com. And, of course, I've been Ross Scott. You can find my stuff at systemcomic.com. And if that isn't enough web addresses, you should check out all of our newscasts over at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. So, with all of that, we hope you guys, we're still always looking for guests to get involved. In fact, that's how we got our guests this week, is by me saying this last week. So, if you want to be on the show, get in touch with me. Send us an email at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. Or find me on the Twitters at @rosscott. And we are always looking for more fun guests. And finally, the last thing, we have a new voicemail, which has gotten 0 messages. So please drunk dial us at 1-320-310-0922. And if you get a chance and feel like a craft project, if you can figure out that our phone number spells out something funny that we could say, like if it's secretly 1320 I poop or something, let us know, because I would love to start announcing that instead. and I'm too lazy. Anyway, with that, it's been a great show. Thank you all for tuning in. Thank you all for being on the show. Thank you to all of you out there for just living your lives. More power to you. So with that, I say, as every week, have a great week. And, Fess is just informing me, our phone number is 1-320-310-0WCB. That's Webcomic Beacon. Look at that. Handy. Awesome. so with all that, I now say, as we say every week here on the show, peanut butter and jelly. See you next time.